The coronavirus may never go away. That's from Dr. Mike Ryan, director of the World Health Organization's Emergencies Program. Dr. Ryan says the world has to manage and come to terms with the virus like it has with HIV. But there is no guarantee it will ever be completely eradicated. For more, we're joined by Lawrence Gostin, professor of law at Georgetown University and director of the O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law. And professor, explain what Dr. Ryan was talking about. Why wouldn't a successful vaccine mean the end of COVID-19?
Well, you know, the truth is that we've actually only eradicated one disease in all of human history, which is smallpox, one major disease. We've eliminated, which is a different term. It's a regional term where you reduce the number. We've eliminated certain diseases like childhood diseases, like measles, chickenpox, mumps, which were common at one time, but they're less common now, but you still have outbreaks. We are going to probably have to live with this virus for the long term, even if we do get a vaccine.
What about the notion of herd immunity, that once a certain percentage of the population has been exposed to this disease and presumably developed antibodies against it, you've effectively stopped the virus from being able to spread? Is there a way to safely get to that point?
We'll probably hit periods where we can do that. But think about this. There are always going to be new people being born and coming in without immunity. Immunity is likely not to be forever. It'll probably be waning, as it is with other coronaviruses. And so over time, you'll lose your immunity. And importantly, the vaccine probably is not going to be 100% effective. Remember, you know, the current influenza vaccine, even when we have a good match, is only about 40-50% effective.
You know, all of us really have never experienced anything like this in our lifetime. So I think although we understand the history of other diseases, it's hard to wrap our heads around this idea. The only thing we can get close to is, like you said, influenza and understanding how we respond to the flu every year. So does controlling this disease's spread in the future then start to look like responding to the flu? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I can. And, you know, you're so right, Tanya, that, you know, coronavirus may or may not be seasonal like the flu. The good news is that coronaviruses don't seem to be as genetically adaptable as flu viruses. Flu viruses are, you know, they're constantly swapping genes, adapting. And so every year, the vaccine kind of has to make an educated guess about what the circulating strain is going to be. We may be in a better position with coronavirus if we had, you know, thinking about the most hopeful scenario. So we may be seeing something anywhere from, you know, measles through to influenza through to even something worse. We've never conquered HIV/AIDS, and of course, we don't have a vaccine for that at all.
We are learning about two people who took a serology test in Washington State, and it showed their blood positive for antibodies to COVID-19, maybe as early as late December, which really throws off the original timeline of when health officials first said the virus might have been here in the United States. What does that tell us, and why does this information matter?
You know, it matters a lot, and frankly, it doesn't surprise me at all. I suspect that although it wasn't until December 30th that China reported the first case of coronavirus to the World Health Organization, many of us think that it had been circulating for a month, maybe 2 months, or even more. And so it doesn't surprise me, but what it means is that we most likely have been having, you know, reasonably widespread silent community transmission in the United States for far longer than we imagined, which is why it's so very difficult to get a handle on this epidemic now in the United States and why we've become the epicenter.
Oh, so, I mean, really, this brings up, though, when you talk about our behaviors and how we respond to it. We were talking this week about quarantine fatigue. I think we're at a point where many people are getting frustrated with the state of things, and also lockdowns, opening up cities, when we're going to do these things. What would you say to people who hear something like this and say, well, if we have to live with this virus forever, why should I even bother with social distancing now?
You know, because it's really our only hope until we get a vaccine. We are going to be in a better position when we get a vaccine and we get an effective treatment. You know, think of it like this. You're in a battle and the enemy is really strong and you don't have any weapons. And that's where we are now. So the only thing we have is classic public health measures, social distancing, personal hygiene, testing, screening, contact tracing, isolation and quarantine. Those things, they can work. You know, they've worked for so many diseases in the past, and we know they work with coronavirus because we've seen it happen in places like Israel, South Korea, and other countries, and Germany, even closer to home. So we can do this. You know, the public just needs to stick it out. But I'm really worried. I'm writing a major medical journal article now about, you know, the so-called, we've talked about this dark fall and winter, because we're going to have circulating influenza virus, circulating coronavirus with probably a major second and third wave. And so we do absolutely have to be vigilant. Whatever the politicians are telling you, the public health and scientific community are pretty consistent and pretty clear, which is that we have to stay the course.
That's Lawrence Gostin, professor of law at Georgetown University and director of the O'Neill Institute for National and Global Health Law. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Tanya.